accession number 9317, reel 4.
Mr. Tom Williamson, Reel 4. After you were wounded and you picked up the Sergeant Major and the other wounded man, could you tell me how you got back to the beach?
Actually, we came under heavy fire all the way during our walk to the beach, arm in arm with the Sergeant Major, and finally we left the beach and boarded a boat.
Did you go to any casualty clearing station or advanced dressing
we
post?
We actually went to the beach and boarded. We put on an ambulance boat and we boarded for Malta.
What were conditions
Not
like?
Malta, St George's Barracks, Malta.
What were conditions like on the boat, hospital boat?
It was a bit crowded. A lot of casualties had transpired through. The road had come up beside me. And we got on the boat. As not too bad as things go at that time.
What, did you have a bed on the boat?
A bed? Yes, I lay down in the ambulance room with the boat.
That's people weren't lying on the decks then?
No, he's undercover.
What sort of medical treatment did you get while you were on the hospital ship?
Well, I never got any treatment, really, until I got to St. George's Barracks in Malta.
And did that cause any problems with your wound, not being treated?
I should imagine it did at that time. I can't remember ever being dressed until I got to Malta. And then we landed in St. George's Barracks, which was transformed into a hospital.
On the boat, did you get given food and water? Did people bring...
Well, that's not a long trip, really, from Gallipoli. So there's no need to only just get us here. We weren't nurses, as it were. Me, being an arm wound, I was able to walk, although I was not well at the time. So they landed us in St. George's and they took us to this hospital, so-called, under the conditions that's very... very rough, you know. There wasn't really high sanitation. We encountered while we was there bugs crawling over at night. We was waking during the night and I sometimes catch these bugs and then swiftly blood they leave behind. And the conditions were hard bed and I stayed there until they thought fit to move me more to the litter. In Malta.
How much actual treatment were you given at St. George's Barracks? Did you get your wound properly dressed and examined there?
I couldn't say that was top class treatment. That was very understaffed and they had many wounded to cope, that we just had the necessary treatment to try and heal the wound while we were there until they thought fit for me not to return back to Gallipoli. I wasn't well enough in health and the wound, so they transferred me to England.
Were you satisfied with the medical treatment you received? Did you think you got a fair deal?
Well, as a chap would take anything in my stride, you know, would you? When you're young, I didn't mind as long as I was being taken care of under the conditions that prevailed. They wasn't top class, even when they moved me to Valletta. I was moved into a tent and they used to get torrential rains there and you'd get washed out. And he was in a tent with another, perhaps wounded man. I remember I was next to a wounded Irishman, and I accidentally placed something on his feet, and he rose upright and swore at me. But there's the conditions that I had to prevail, and then after the storm they moved us again further into the letter, so we had more comfortable digs. That seemed to be a case of just getting you there and getting you back. The treatment wasn't top class.
When were you moved back to England? Can you remember the date?
That was early 19. It was during 15, of course, before Christmas. And I was moved up to Birmingham. From there and into hospital where I stayed until nearly 16. This wound seemed to be a long while healing.
Do you know why that was? Was it infected as a possibly result?
I don't know. Not really why that took so long for me to become, go to convalescent after that wound. But eventually I was made fit.
Did you have any visitors while you were in hospital in England or convalescing?
I can't recall any. No. It's just no visitors.
Now, in 1916, after convalescence, you were past fit, is that?
Yes.
Roughly what month was that? Do you know?
Just a. That's the beginning of 16.
And where were you sent?
Where
were you sent when you were past fit?
To a place called Wendover. And the name of the camp was Halton. And that's a unit that trained new recruits and made men and fit for the return to service. Also to train recruits coming from the country in England.
Yes. Do you know the name of this unit?
First Force, Norfolk. And it's the First Force Norfolk Battalion under the command of Lieutenant Fletcher. And then all major and senior officers of the regular army were there to train men and recruit them and get them fit to return to the further fighting, if necessary, in any part of the world.
So you were arriving as a Lance Corporal?
Yes.
Recovered from your wound. What accommodation were you given?
I was in huts, in nice huts. You sleep two in the end of the hut, and we had to do our drills until I was picked out to become a and made a corporal and sent to...
Before we go on to that, what sort of training were you given there while you were here?
Marching, generally. Marching. I knew all my physical and instructional training, but I gained more knowledge after I'd been there a little while because I was sent from there to a school in Hertfordshire.
While you were at the first, at the Halton camp, were you treated as the same as the new recruits, or were you given any special dispensations as an old soldier?
Well, no, it was just a bunch of older soldiers, and we'd be taken for walks until we really become suitable for their convenience to retrain those who were retrained sufficiently to return to their units. I was picked out to, as a corporal, to go to a school.
This was an NCO school?
Yes.
Do you know where that was and what its full title was?
It's just an NCO school in Hertfordshire, in Lord Rothschild's estate that the school was. Or his, on his estate.
What now? Can you tell me anything about the sort of things you were taught at that school?
At the school? Well, I had a preliminary lessons on drill, went right from drill instructions to the lowest gun. And that was meant for me to train other NCOs when I got back. Or when I got back to my regiment, I became useful to train recruits. And that's when I was made a corporal. And further on, I was promoted to sergeant and sent to the NCO school where I'd been a pupil myself. And I had a platoon of NCOs to train them in drill, etc.
So you were made a drill instructor at this NCO school at Lord Rotherhithe's estate?
That's right.
What can you tell me anything about what you taught the trainee NCOs and what methods you used to try and make them into good NCOs?
Well, first of all, you've got to know the drill book inside out in detail, to detail every movement. For instance, if you want, say, standard ease, you'd place your hands behind your back and carry off your left foot to the left, and you'd be easy on your feet, and you'd have to train all drill movements right up to the time they'd done manoeuvres in the field for field activities. You train them right through to strictly, so there's really soldiers. You had to know your own abilities to be able to impart to them the instruction they needed to make them able to return to the different fronts equipped with enough knowledge in firepower and also discipline.
So you taught them in drill, you taught them discipline, you taught them tactic, their role within that tactical.
Field operations, and we've done everything at this school.
How did you teach them to impart discipline?
To what?
How did you teach them to enforce discipline?
Well, that come naturally when you impart drill. Discipline is a forward. I mean, you have to be strictly. They have to do everything under strict orders, and they have distance, whereas they mustn't turn their eyes right and left when they're standing at attention, or they have to be strictly disciplined at all times.
Did you teach them any way of getting the respect of their men? I mean, did you teach them how to behave so that men would follow them as NCOs?
Yes, we had to tell them to address our advantages, to make them smart in their drills and make them fully equipped. And as a drill instructor, I did cover the fire process of what a soldier have to do, the range, but I was really a drill instructor on parade on the drill ground. If we had platoons and platoon sergeants and officers, and I had this own platoon of mine, an NCO, to be responsible for discipline and strict drill and appearance, and so that they maintained and got disciplined.
So in a way you taught by example?
You did by yourself. You had to demonstrate what every moment of drill consists of. Every turn or every movement, you had to first demonstrate and show them the proper protection and standard for attention. I mean, there's everything in detail that you had to detail to them.
How did you get on with the trainee NCOs? What was your relationship like with them?
Well, we all, in the army, you have to get on for the... That's very good, really. There's all NCOs, Lance Corporals, that's been trained to go back to their units and probably get promoted.
Were you very strict with them?
Yes. I found I got a lot of good work from a soldier if you treated him fairly. I wasn't one of those high-minded sergeant majors who swore at people. I find that you'd get a lot more action and smartness from an ordinary man when you detailed and asked him, told him the proper course to take to be smart. I got on well with the training recruits and got smartness from them and discipline from them, and they were ready to come to terms with the war. Mind you, there'd be a musketry instructor who would take them on the reins for firing, but my job was to treat and train them to be smart and easy to manoeuvre around and any call they was asked to do.
Were there other instructors who were a little more unfair than you?
They seemed to be pretty partial to the men. I found even the officers were very good. That's a good relationship. There's four platoons. They each had a platoon sergeant, a platoon officer, and we had a commanding officer over the hall. And we found that the idea of NCOs having been soldiers, they were able to set a good example, and you found it much easier to train soldiers, as it were, although they weren't had any ranks. But they were having ranks given to them by going to the school.
How long were you at this school in all, first as a trainee and then as an instructor? Can you remember?
So I sat till all end of 16 to 17. Then I was posted back to the battalion, the 4th Norfolk unit. I was posted back to my battalion then, and they closed the school. I'd found I'd got sufficient number of NCOs.
So that was in early 1918?
Yes.
Do you know which month?
Not exactly.
While you were at the school, did you ever want to go back to your battalion? Did you miss your battalion? Or did you want to get back to active service with another battalion?
I was quite happy to be there training other people. I had no option in early 18. Every man was called in England.
But before that, did you feel that you'd done your bit in getting wounded and facing what you had to at Gallipoli? Or was it... What sort of thoughts went on in your head about it?
Well, I had no... I had no desire to go back fighting anymore.
So your three...
That's natural.
The 3 days at Gallipoli had put you off. It had been...
Naturally. And I had the option to transfer to the King's African Rifles or go to France.
This was
every man had to go to France at the time of the assault. The final assault they made on Germany is when every man was fit, whoever he was. The school, our company had no use for training anymore.
Was this in March when the Germans attacked, or later when the Allied counterattacks began?
That'd be while we was counterattacking the Germans, really. We'd got them puzzled through so many movements abroad, Turkey and Gallipoli and Far East, drew the attention, and Germany's hard put to focus what England was doing. They had to concentrate us being even in Africa. They wondered what we was doing there. They sent out forces to cope, to counterattack what we was doing.
So, in 1918, the order came that the school was to be closed, and you were given a choice of going back to your battalion in France.
I had to go back to battalion, yes.
Well, did you have to go back to your battalion, or were you given the choice of going to the... I'm not quite sure when you were given the chance to go to the King's African Rifles. Was that after you'd rejoined your battalion?
I went back to the battalion. I was then an instructor for recruits that come into the battalion from the country areas. I had to still keep training as a recruit.
So you went back to battalion in England. Where did you go there?
That same unit.
Sorry?
That's the same unit and place at Halton Camp.
So you went back to Halton Camp?
To this battalion who were responsible for training new recruits to go to fight to France.
So that's the second force again?
Yes, I even took a draft of 48 men myself to France, single-handed.
What did that... Could you tell me about that, what that involved, taking a draft to France?
Well, you have to take them to Waterloo Station. Me and myself as a sergeant had to take 40-odd men, recruits, to Waterloo Station, and you had to see them onto a boat and go with them to Cherbourg. And I was worried when we got to Waterloo Station, the men asked if they could go home and see their parents. And I gave them permission, being, I was a lenient sergeant, I should think. And they said, they promised me they'd come back to the station. The train was held up, some didn't turn up. Eventually, we got the lot back, I did. And I got them on board and handed them over to the Cherbourg officers, and that's that.
Were you not worried that some of them would desert?
At that time. Yes, naturally. I said they could go. They landed us, some from the country. They naturally wanted. I wondered when they'd get back. They did all turn up. And we got them safe.
Did you get into any trouble because the train had to be delayed?
No, that's all in order. The army officials waived that, I suppose. I wouldn't say that was delayed too long. You know, men had to get back to the train, and they did carried out their promises, everyone.
So the men were delayed they didn't deliberately not come back, it's just they were a bit late back.
It was a bit late.
Did you have to send out anyone to fetch any of them?
No, they turned up on the station. I got them in the train and eventually got them on the boat.
What was their morale like? What were they like? What was their attitude to going to the Western Front when you put them in this draft? Did they say anything to
you? Well, they seemed to be... I was satisfied with their training because I helped to train them to face the fighting they'd have to meet when they got to France.
But were they willing? Were they
weren't unwilling. No, they were quite amiable, and they knew those in the army. They had to do what was told, and unfortunately, after a week or so, they all got lost. The Germans made a lot of casualties, you know, just at that time, before we made the final assault. I wonder how we ever won the war, but I think that's through England being restricted and occupying the Germans to different areas of the world that the Kaiser Bill couldn't cope.
Now, you were the second fourth at Halton Camp.
First fourth, sorry.
And then, what happened then? You transferred to the East African Rifle
Corps. Then the time came that every man had to be fit, who was fit, had to do service either in France or somewhere, because they wanted reinforcements.
Did you have the choice?
I had a choice of either going back to France to fight or to join the King's African Rifles, and I chose the latter. That's only human nature, wasn't me. I didn't want to go fight the war. I'd had a taste of a fight, and I thought, well, I'll choose to be instructor to go out to East Africa and learn the language and teach the boys from the bush and train them to become soldiers.
Did you have any sort of training course before you went out to East Africa?
Yes, that was a long process, really.
Can you take us through the whole process of being assigned?
Well, first of all, when we knew we was transferred, I had to leave. I came back up from leave to the same halted camp, and then they sent me to Wimbledon for a 12-week course in a school to be taught Swahili. That's the language... prevalent in East Africa, or among most at that time. And I was able to converse with them through my language.
How did you learn? How did you find learning Swahili? Did you find it an easy language to grasp?
There's only three classes in Swahili. I forget the M2 class, and once you learn these three classes, you was able to converse with anybody. I found it pretty simple to do. Of course, the longer you spoke the language, the better you became acquainted with the native.
Who taught you during the 12-week course?
That's a special school.
Who were the teachers? Were they people back from Africa, or...?
There'd be officers who was well fluent in Swahili, I should imagine. We had textbooks and all set to read through to try and gain knowledge. I had a good book on Swahili.
What about in local native African customs and things like that? Were you given any books to teach you about that? Or were you just taught the language?
We was more or less taught the language. We had to deal with their peculiarities when we got there. And I didn't find them difficult. I mixed with the African soldiers in this.
After you'd finished the course, were you given any special kit to go out to Africa with?
Yes, we had an officer's kit. That meant we had our own canvas wash basins and supported by where you wash, and we could carry them. And we had our own kit, just bed, just rolled up to sleep on when we got there. So we had everything an officer would have to do the job. We was well treated. It was more like officers, although we still held the rank of sergeants. There's 150 of us, you remember. That's a big task for England to equip us for that journey.
Did you buy anything special, you know, any special kit before you went out?
I don't remember, not buying much, though. I relied on the army. Unfortunately, we always arrived at the place a day too soon. The food wasn't there. We had to make our own money go to the tents that were provided out in East Africa.